Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Gavia Baker-Whitelaw. Gavia, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me on.
I'm excited, and you are also one of, you enter the rare club of transatlantic Random Trek guests, so thank you for being not in America,
yeah,
I guess.
I don't know where I'm going with this.
Well, before we jump into Star Trek, tell the people a little bit about yourself, Gavia.
Okay, well, so I kind of write about science fiction and fandom and geeky stuff for a living. My day job is I'm a staff writer at the Daily Dot, where currently I am recapping Star Trek Discovery, but I also do like a bunch of other kind of fandom reporting and movie reviews and that kind of thing. It's a great job. I love it. And I also have like a bunch of side projects in the same general realm. So I have a podcast called Overinvested, where my friend Morgan and I, each week, we kind of talk about a different movie or TV show or pop culture thing, and we, you know, analyze it from like a fanish perspective, but we're also quite critical, so we've got that kind of balance. Sometimes we'll look back at something really terrible like Avatar, and sometimes we'll be looking at something we really love, you know. So the title's Overinvested, it kind of explains itself. And I also edit a fan fiction newsletter, which is, it's, you know, I think the audience here is quite nerdy, so you kind of get that level of nerdiness. But yeah, my friend Elizabeth and I, we kind of recommend fanfic from different fandoms and get guest editors in to come in and share their wealth with our readers. So that's called the Rec Center newsletter, and it's got kind of fan art and fandom news and that kind of thing as well.
Oh, so what is your, I don't know if you can answer this question, but what is your favorite fandom to read fan fiction from?
That's an interesting one, because different fandoms have kind of different flavors of fanfic. There's some things where the source material is incredibly good and the fanfic is not that great. I can recommend one fandom that I think a lot of listeners will be familiar with the show, but they might not expect the fanfiction to be good having watched the show, and that is Stargate Atlantis. So the Stargate spinoff from the mid-2000s, which I don't think had anything resembling critical acclaim. I was in high school when it came out, so, you know, my critical faculties were not fully formed. But the fan fiction for that show was incredibly good. Loads of really smart people were watching it, and they kind of wrote really long, complex, kind of novel-length stories that both explained kind of the plot holes in the show, they explained the characterization flaws, and they really kind of fleshed out a concept that was quite interesting, but not really executed with much panache in the actual show itself. So I would recommend Stargate Atlantis fanfiction.
Well, there you go. Check it out. That's one of my favorite things about fandom, is that people are so passionate about something that perhaps is not that good, and then they elevate it by creating unauthorized good versions of it.
Yeah.
So good job.
I would recommend a novel-length fanfiction called Written by the Victors, which the concept is that the Atlantis city from the show is fully autonomous and disconnected from Earth, so they never regain contact with the rest of the Stargate mission, and they essentially build their own civilization, making political alliances with the rest of the people in the Pegasus Galaxy. And it's half written like a normal story with kind of adventures and romance subplots and stuff. And the other half is written like historical journals. So halfway through the story, Earth regains contact and they send all these anthropologists and politicians and historians to go and study the Atlantis culture. And it's kind of written in that style of academic papers where they're all like, what the fuck's going on over there? So it's astonishingly well written. And by the end, it's actually kind of turned into another language because it's so far into the future. Very smart.
That sounds intriguing. Now, I think that anyone who's listening now will fully understand the depths of your geekery. So I think they could guess the answer to this question I'm about to ask you, which I already know the answer to, but I'm going to ask it anyway because it's a tradition. Do you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Yes.
Now, my follow-up question to that is, if you had to rate yourself on like a scale of Star Trek fans, where the low end is familiar with Star Trek and the high end is attended a Star Trek convention in a costume of some kind, where would you fall on that spectrum?
I'm a weird combination of both extremes, because I've actually only seen maybe 20% of Star Trek overall. I've not even watched all the way through any single one of the series. But I'm very into the parts that I've seen. I kind of recap the new show for a living. I was wearing a Starfleet earring today while I was roller skating. And I have been to general conventions where there have been, you know, Klingons and what have you. So I'm kind of, I've got kind of a weird balance. But you know, it takes a long time to watch all of Star Trek. I'm probably going to be doing that for like the rest of my life. There's billions of episodes.
Well, yes. Well, you're talking to a man who has decided to have a podcast where I randomly watch every episode of Star Trek. So,
yeah, the non-linear aspect is certainly intriguing.
Yes, and foolish when I get to certain arcs. And certainly I've added Discovery to the mix. And so that will be interesting once I'm watching that out of sequence with someone because, well, we've only seen, what, 5 episodes, but it seems like it's very serialized. So, or not serialized. It's very whatever the opposite of serialized is. Is that right? I don't remember the word. Okay, so it is serial. There you go, because it's a serial. There you go. But before we jump into, so for this episode, we watched an episode of Voyager. Episode, what is it? 12? Yes, episode 13 from season 2, Prototype. Before we talk about Voyager, though, I want to talk about Star Trek Discovery, because that's how I came across you. I was reading one of your recaps of Star Trek Discovery on the Daily Dot. So I want to get your thoughts on it as a whole. Now that we've seen 5 episodes as we record this, what do you think of it overall?
I think it's a really promising start. Like, it's very different from all the other shows, which I personally am completely happy with. I really think that each time they start a new one, it does need to kind of make its own way. The production values and the acting and the writing is all really, really high quality. And I'm kind of hooked on a lot of the storylines, but I do feel currently that it's too dark, not in the sense that I think that Star Trek shouldn't tackle kind of difficult topics and adult material, because obviously Deep Space Nine did, and I'm not saying it should be like, oh, just make like a cheery comedy all the time. But I think there does need to be more of a balance between, you know, warm relationships between characters and seeing more personal stuff from their lives, you know, their hobbies and that sort of thing. I feel like because they are focusing so much on, you know, there's quite a lot of violence, you know, for the last 2 episodes. So that's 4 and 5. There's animal cruelty, which I found to be quite a surprising choice because, you know, there's several episodes of Star Trek previous shows where it's really specifically about making the decision not to do harm once you've figured out you are accidentally doing harm, whereas in this there's less of a kind of moral center among the main characters. So I'm looking forward to them having kind of closer relationships between the main crew and more I guess optimism, which is something the showrunners have been talking about. So I think that they are like cognizant of that being an essential part of the show, but they're expecting viewers to wait quite a while for that to kind of warm up. And I kind of think that might have perhaps been a bit of a mistake. They should have had more of that kind of humor and interpersonal contact in earlier episodes.
Yes, I can see that. I think that a lot of Star Trek fans are reacting, certainly to the first 4 episodes. I feel like episode 5 people, with the exception of the animal cruelty, people are kind of turning the point where they think, oh, I could see where they're going with this, especially since by the, well, spoilers for the 5th episode of Star Trek Discovery. But Burnham finally convinces people that maybe we shouldn't torture this animal, and they basically save it.
Yeah. And I will say that while I did just kind of talk a bunch about my key criticism, which I think is like a really important part of this show, like they really do need to be kind of more warm and nice because there are so many dystopian shows on TV already. I already love basically every character, even though we barely know anything about it. You know, I love Michael Burnham as soon as she came on screen. I think Snequa Martin-Green is an incredible actress. Like, just when she kind of has a really big emotional moment, I just engage with it so much and I'm like, I'm crying. And obviously Tilly is very cute and I'm very into Saru. I read the first tie-in novel already and it has loads of kind of Saru point of view stuff. So if you're into him, I recommend that book. And obviously Lorca, because Jason Isaacs, really, he's so good at playing creeps. I just love him.
He is. And I think that's the other thing a lot of people reacted to, because we got the first two episodes of Discovery, right, was on the Shenzhou, and we've got Captain Georgiou, who's much more of a
classic, you know, Star Trek captain.
Normal. Yeah, exactly. She does the right thing. And Burnham, at a critical point in her career, makes the wrong decision. Even though she thinks she's doing the right thing, she isn't. And then she ends up on a ship with a captain who she probably, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to guess there's going to be a point at which Burnham is going to have to try to convince Captain Lorca not to do the evil, creepy thing he wants to do. Because I'm pretty sure he wants to do some evil, creepy things. For the good of the Federation, I'm sure is what he will say. But, you know, we'll see. But I think it's very interesting. People don't have some, we're expecting, I think, perhaps, or hoping for another TNG, and that is not what we got, which I'm glad we didn't.
I can't imagine why anyone thought that was going to happen. I mean, it's, first of all, not the kind of show that happens on TV anymore. And also, if you've seen the trailers, I think it's fairly apparent.
Yes, it is. It is a strikingly different Star Trek, which I think is good. And it, for people who want a warmed over pale imitation of TNG, you can watch Fox's The Orville and get it.
Oh, you know, that's a no from me.
I am not. I have watched every episode of The Orville. I don't know why I keep doing it. I don't like it. People who are listening, if you like it, that's cool. People can. This is my subjective opinion. I'm not saying you shouldn't enjoy it. I'm just saying I don't understand why you do. But that's all I'll say about The Orville. But enough about Discovery, enough about The Orville, which isn't even a Star Trek show. Let's talk about Voyager. Now, you mentioned that you've watched perhaps 20% of Star Trek episodes. What is your history with Voyager, if any?
Well, I think Voyager perhaps is technically my first Star Trek. I grew up without a TV, so I was exposed to Star Trek as a concept at a really early age because my mom was really into it. But I wasn't really watching it. So I'd probably seen, like, you know, one episode of the original series somewhere. I'd read a bunch of Star Trek tie-in novels because they were at the local library. So, you know, I was familiar with a bunch of random characters from around the universe. But when I was like 12 or something, one of my friends was a big Star Trek Voyager fan. So she showed me a bunch of episodes. And I guess that must have been kind of my introduction to actually watching the show, was watching original series and Voyager with her. And B'Elanna Torres was actually my favorite character as a kid, so this was a good episode for me. I remember that I was like so engaged with the episode where she and Tom Paris get together when they're kind of trapped in space and they realize that's when they're in love or something. And I've not rewatched it, and I'm reasonably sure that as an adult I would not be so on board with that relationship. But when I was 12, I was like, this is the most romantic thing I've ever seen, because I've never seen anything romantic before.
It was a low bar for the romance.
I met it and I was satisfied.
So your exposure was original series, Voyager first. That's interesting. So what would you, and I skipped over this question, if you had to pick a series that was your favorite, which one would you pick?
It's a dead heat between the original series and Deep Space Nine. And it's so hard for me to pick, because I love the original series, and also the original series movies, like some of them are just tremendous, and like some of my favorite science fiction movies ever. I think they're just so peculiar. Like, you would never see now a film like, I don't know, like any of the original Star Trek movies would never get made in Hollywood, because like they're so kind of, they're mostly about friendship. They've got really weird premises. They allowed the actors to direct them. Like, that's not a blockbuster that happens anymore. But it's just kind of, they're very kind of warm-hearted. I like the like silly 1960s humor. I really, really enjoy William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy's performances. And I love the fanfic. Really charmed by the original series, but I think the Deep Space Nine is qualitatively the best. You know, you can't really judge 1960s and 90s Star Trek on the same level, because they come from completely different eras of TV making. But Deep Space Nine, you know, it has these incredibly complex, well-developed arcs. Is the only show I've actually been watching in sequence, so I'm currently up to season 5 watching with my housemates. And loving it. I love every single character in that show. my favorite changes with each episode.
you read my mind, because I was going to ask, Deep Space Nine is I think, the best Star Trek. I think that for me, and people who've listened to this podcast know I've said this a million times, my favorite Star Trek is The Next Generation, mostly because that is when I hit on liking Star Trek. So my default Star Trek is The Next Generation. But I know that Deep Space Nine is better than The Next Generation. And don't send me emails. It's fine. But if you had to pick a character, who currently is your favorite Deep Space Nine character?
Well, my favorite supporting character is definitely Garak, which I think is...
I like how the qualifications are ready, so you can have more than one favorite.
It's very hard to pick my favorite main character, because I really love Jadzia, Kira, and Bashir. And I also love every single episode that's about Sisko, so that's like half the main cast.
I'm interested that you picked Bashir, because I feel like I like all the characters of Deep Space Nine, but I feel like Bashir would be at the bottom of the list.
I like him because he's terrible. I think he's really obnoxious, and I love the way that, because it's quite common for, there's a lot of TV characters who are young, overconfident, obnoxious men who hit on women a lot, in various different permutations, mm-hmm. but it's a very popular trope. And often it's kind of played for laughs, but a lot of the time they'll get the girl, or you're kind of meant to sympathize with them or whatever. And with Bashir, you basically just laugh at him because he's kind of like a character who would be your annoying coworker, but he's not bad enough that you're like, he's my annoying coworker that I'd report to HR for harassment. He's just like a dumb baby idiot. But at the same time, when the going gets really tough and he has to do something in like a serious situation, he immediately snaps into duty and is like a really efficient, competent Starfleet officer and doctor. And I really like that they managed to build those two things realistically into the same character and have him be quite sensitive while also being superficially incredibly obnoxious.
It is true. And I am doing a rewatch of Deep Space Nine with my wife. I remember Bashir accurately. But as I watch more, I like him more than I did before. He's still on the bottom of my list of characters that I like in Deep Space Nine.
It's like every other character in the show is cool, I guess, apart from O'Brien, who is like the least cool person in the world. But
but he is so uncool that he's cool again. That's right. He's busy. He's dead. He gets tortured in every other episode. So poor O'Brien. But Voyager, let's go back to Voyager. That's what we watched. Prototype. This is one of those episodes of Star Trek that is all a plot. We've got one story, and it is a pretty straightforward story. They find a robot, B'Elanna fixes him, and hijinks ensue. And this is really, I think B'Elanna, there aren't a lot for most characters to do except for B'Elanna in this episode. There is enough of Harry Kim to annoy me, because I don't like
Harry
Kim.
God, I feel so bad for the actor who played Harry Kim. They literally gave him nothing to do for 7 years. Just appalling.
It is true. And his role here is to basically, in the opening sequence, kind of help B'Elanna, but also annoy her as much as he possibly can for no reason. So he annoys me, because I like B'Elanna, and Harry Kim should leave her alone. But I have a well-documented hatred of characters, so I apologize. And Voyager seems to have the highest percentage of characters that I do not care
that
for.
Is the
so
problem.
I don't like... Yes, I don't like Neelix.
Oh, God, he's so annoying.
He's Neelix. I like Kes fine, except that she has a creepy relationship with Neelix, and I don't like that.
Kes. I just don't get it.
I don't think anybody understands Kes. That's why she left. I don't like Tom Paris. Even though your 12-year-old self was enamored with the romance between B'Elanna and
Tom Paris. More episodes with him.
I like Chakotay, but they don't do anything with Chakotay, so he kind of just hangs around. I like Tuvok, but he doesn't do anything really. I like Janeway a lot.
I love her so much. Even though, like everyone else in Voyager, her characterization is really patchy, and occasionally she'll just turn into like a monster in an episode and just start like bombing people or something. But I feel like that's just Voyager. Them's the breaks.
You know, they're stuck out far away from home. Sometimes you just gotta throw some people in the airlock and see what happens. And look for coffee, because that's what Janeway wants. But this episode is interesting. I guess it's kind of a typical Star Trek episode. There is this moral quandary. They're trying to solve a problem. They come across the solution has unintended consequences. And then, you know, there's a point at which you have to decide, what do I do? And that's what B'Elanna does in this episode, right? So it opens with an interesting open, though, right? I think, I don't know how many episodes of Star Trek open in, we get a viewpoint that isn't anyone that we know, and they're kind of looking through, you know, we're seeing the action that's happening through the eyes of an unknown at this point.
Yeah, it's directed by Jonathan Frakes, and I wondered if that was his idea or if it was in the script.
Oh, I think I will. I don't know the answer, but I'm going to give Jonathan Frakes credit for it because it was good. And I like Jonathan Frakes. So 2 points to you, Commander Riker. And I'm sure he does not like it when people call him Commander Riker. Or maybe he does. I don't know.
I think he's probably inured to it by now.
He must be. I will say here, I don't know if I've told this story before, but on the podcast, I'm certain I did when I was in college. I had an academic advisor whose name was Professor Frakes. And I was a Star Trek fan then as well. And I knew Jonathan Frakes, but I did not think, I thought it was just Professor Frakes had the same name. Who cares? So I go to his office for my first academic advisor meeting. I walk in and there's this, like, if you think of, imagine an elderly bearded English professor and you have what Professor Frakes looks like, and imagine his office, and that's what an English professor's office is. It was his office, except for one thing. He had a life-size cutout of Commander Riker standing in his office with a bubble that had obviously been added that said "Hi, Pop," and that is when I realized Professor Frakes was Jonathan Frakes' father.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I know, and I had a moment, but I kept it cool, and I did not tell him how much I love Star Trek because I didn't think he cared, especially since he started the conversation off by complaining about the cheap pen they gave him for his 25th anniversary working at the university. So I didn't think he cared about my Star Trek fandom. Anyway, that is a long rambling offshoot of this episode. I'm going to do something unusual and ask you, what did you think of this episode before we jump into kind of blow by blow what happens in this episode?
I thought it was like a charming episode of Doctor Who. I mean, this was definitely kind of a bog standard tune in and understand absolutely everything immediately kind of episode. You know, they introduce this robot who was just adorably, clearly just a man in a tinfoil suit, which was very sweet. And, you know, they have to kind of teach the robot to communicate. And then it turns out the robot is part of a robot race that's dying out. So they have that classic conundrum of, mm-hmm. you know, should they break the prime directive by teaching the robots how to reproduce, which is obviously B'Elanna's job. And then, of course, Janeway is like, no. So the robots kidnap her. And wouldn't you know it, the robots are actually part of an all-robot war where they were programmed long ago to fight each other into oblivion, which is just, it's very vintage, you know, which is not a criticism. It was, I think I watched it kind of around breakfast time, feeling very chill, being like, just going to tune into this stress-free episode. Yeah, I thought it was fun. It was very, you know, there was not much kind of meaningful stuff going on there, but I have no serious criticisms.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. As I've been watching many episodes of Star Trek with a more critical eye than I had before for the podcast, I realized that there are many flavors of Star Trek episodes and many varieties of quality. And this is certainly one of the kind of middle of the road. It is a fine episode of Star Trek. It is not an episode anyone really needs to rush out and see unless you really like robots, I guess. But
if you're a B'Elanna completist.
Yes, if you're a B'Elanna, that's true. This is an interesting B'Elanna episode, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, just fine. It wasn't offensive. There are many, many, many worse episodes of Star Trek you can watch. So it starts the interesting thing, right? They find this ship, or they find like this dude. I guess he's floating in space, the robot. And I guess they find out he's a robot very quickly, and B'Elanna wants to, you know, start him up. And this is, you know, this is part of the thing that I like about Star Trek. You're floating, you're trying to get home, you're hundreds of thousands of light years away from Earth, or maybe even millions of light years away. You find this robot and just floating in space. And your first thought is, let's try and power it up. What's the worst that could happen? It seems like an awful idea.
Well, you know, they're seeking out new life and civilizations.
It's true. It just seems
scientific investigation.
From a security standpoint, as Tuvok points out, you really should just not power up the robot. And that's when Janeway is like, we're a science vessel. We're powering up that robot. And B'Elanna's like, okay, I'll power up the robot. Harry Kim is like, I don't know if we can power up the robot. And everyone's like, oh, Harry Kim.
They've managed to make sure there's a role for every character in there, so they, you know, do whatever Actors Guild thing means that they all have to be in every episode.
That's right. Tuvok says, don't do it. Chakotay later offers up an idea of how they can rescue B'Elanna. Tom flies a shuttle. Neelix gives some advice and complains about making stew, I think. The doctor helps B'Elanna figure out her trouble. And I think that's everybody has been checked off throughout the list. And Janeway is, of course, Janeway. So she makes decisions. So everybody has something to do. But B'Elanna, this is a B'Elanna episode. She is on a mission to repair this robot. Why? Because it's an engineering problem and she's an engineer. And so they figure out a way to do it. Harry Kim helps her. He's like, we should, in the Oak Cold Open, I think he basically is like, can't we just take a break? And she's like, well, you can take a break. I'm going to keep working on it. And Harry Kim says, well, if you are going to keep working on it, I'm going to keep working on it, because Harry Kim can't take a hint. B'Elanna's like, I really just want to be alone, Harry Kim. And then he leaves. And this is when she goes to sleep, and then she realizes she has an idea. I forget even what her idea is, but she runs to talk to the doctor about it in order to make sure Robert Picardo has something to do with this episode. And I do like the doctor a lot. I know I listed a bunch of characters I don't like on Voyager, but the doctor is certainly one of my favorite Star Trek characters, yeah. Let alone.
Can't really go wrong with Robert Picardo.
No, he's great. He's very charming. He doesn't have anything to do really in this episode except to suggest B'Elanna try a blood transfusion, and that's really it. But that's all you need. And this is, so spoiler alert, B'Elanna does in fact resurrect the robot. And what I thought was funny, because clearly the robot they're working on is a prop with no person inside of it, and they show kind of its midriff, and it has these seriously sculpted abs, because I guess if you're going to make a robot, it should have sculpted abs. And then once it is alive, and there's a person in there, or functioning, I guess I should say, and there's a person in there, the person clearly does not have sculpted abs, because they fill out to the uniform very well. Now, this is me. I don't have abs at all, but I just thought it was funny that they showed them, and then the person who was in there clearly.
It was a wonderfully lo-fi robot. It was one of the reasons why it kind of reminded me a lot of kind of vintage Doctor Who, along with the whole concept of it being like these two warring robot races that were programmed long ago to fight.
Yeah, and the robots, so once the robot's walking around, it's doing stuff, it's moving very much like a Doctor Who robot, which is to say slowly and awkwardly.
I would guess that it's probably because if they move faster, the little bits of plastic robot clack together and get picked up on the boom mic.
I think you're probably right. And they probably can't see where they're going because they have a helmet over their head with no eye holes. I will say I like the face sculpting. It looks very kind of Metropolis Art Deco-y. Mm. So it appealed to me. And I don't know if that was, I'm sure some prop designer was inspired by the robots in Metropolis or something, but kudos to whoever that was, who is certainly not listening to this podcast. But and so, yeah, that's the thing. So she meets, what is this robot's name? He has a number.
It's like 39 and a bunch of other numbers.
Yes, automated unit 3947 is what he does. After the doctor says, oh, you should try a blood transfusion, she fills him with warp plasma or something, and it seems to work. Everybody's very excited. He comes back to life. He says, I am automated unit 3947. And everyone's like, OMG. There is a part, I don't know if this happens, but there's a nice part where the 3947 asks if there's any robots in Starfleet. And this is when we get the quick shout out for Data, who is a sentient robot and who has a name, and the personnel unit is intrigued and would like a name, but they don't give him a name. I thought at that point she would give him a name, but she did not.
Yeah, there were a couple of issues there.
And she's like, whatever, you've got a number. And this is when she finds out that, the robot asks if she's a builder, right? He says, oh, are you fixed me? Does that mean you're a builder? And then as soon as I heard him say that, I thought, these robots killed the builders. Don't tell them you're a builder.
For a while, I was like, are we going to have this kind of become like a proto-Borg situation? But it did turn out they were basically just, you know, they are intelligent, but they're not like hyper intelligent. So they're essentially service drones that were programmed to be soldiers. And now they're dying out because they don't know how to make the engine basically that powers their heart. So each one has to be unique. And B'Elanna figures this out and is like, look, I can't do this for you. Or rather, she says she can't do it for you because of the Prime Directive, because Janeway forbids her.
Janeway told her. No. Yeah, because she's like, oh, I totally can fix this for you. And she runs to Janeway and she says, listen, they just need me to build them a bunch of robot hearts and teach them how to do it so that they can procreate themselves. It's great.
And it's a whole motherhood thing, because B'Elanna is one of the characters that kind of deals with parenthood, which is like, you know, most Star Trek characters, like, they don't have long-term relationships and they also kind of don't become parents because it's TV and that kind of messes with the story. But B'Elanna is one of the characters who gets married and has kids, and kind of the idea of her having children, as far as I recall, does generally tie into her story already, because she had such a weird upbringing. You know, her mother is a Klingon and her father's human, and they eventually got divorced because his father couldn't really handle hanging out with two Klingon women, or at least that's how B'Elanna interpreted it. So she's got a really screwed up attitude to her cultural identity, and she doesn't want to have a Klingon child. And I think when she's pregnant in later seasons, she kind of tries to genetically engineer her baby so that it's more human. I don't think she does in the end. I don't really know how the baby turns out, but, you know.
Someone will tell us, because I don't know either. But that's not. B'Elanna is an interesting character, and so it's interesting, because there could have gone two ways here, right? They could have went the maternal route, which is what I think they do. It's like, she feels maternal feelings for this robot that she has helped, and she wants to help him because he seems nice, and help him, you know, discover the joy of parenting, which she kind of feels a little bit here because she's resurrected him, right? The other option they could have done was be that she kind of falls in love with the robot for some reason, which I think would have been far worse.
That really would have been quite absurd. Much as I would love to see a robot-human love story. I mean, Discovery can go there. They have at least one robot character, so I would absolutely be there for this. But one episode in Voyager is maybe not the ideal location.
And Data and Tasha Yar had a little love story there. So
I mean, sure.
I'm just saying. He's fully functional. That's all we know. So that's the big thing. And Janeway says, no, we can't help these robots make more robots.
Because this is one of the episodes we've decided to pay attention to the Prime Directive.
Right. Today we're following the Prime Directive. B'Elanna says, well, what if they were, just creatures and they were sterile and we could fix their sterility? Would you forbid that then? And Janeway's remark, you know, kind of counter argument is, well, they're not. And so Prime Directive. And B'Elanna's like, okay, fine. And this is one of the things I like about Star Trek as well, is that, you know, the captain has made a decision. B'Elanna doesn't particularly agree with it, but she is going to try and follow her orders, which is, don't make the robots be able to make robot babies. They don't literally make robot babies. They just make fully grown robots. That would be interesting if there were tiny baby robots that grew, but they were not. 3947 is sad that they cannot be fixed.
So naturally,
although Torres does,
he kidnaps her.
He kidnaps
and takes her back.
That's
to
what
the
you
ship.
Do.
So we now have a standoff between Voyager and the robot ship, which seems to be much more powerful in terms of weapons. But Voyager is faster, so there's kind of a race against time where Voyager needs to mend itself enough that they can figure out a way to get B'Elanna out and essentially run away without losing another fight. Meanwhile, the robot ship kind of knows that there's this, that Voyager will be able to run away. So they kind of give her like a, a few days to find a way to build unique hearts to power all of the robots. And she does eventually figure out how to do this while on back on Voyager. Chakotay and Paris and Janeway have figured out a way to kind of get through the shields and duck in and get and beam out B'Elanna. But at the very last moment, right after she has birthed the first robot, she discovers the terrible truth, which I already spoiled earlier in the episode because I'm terrible at linear storytelling, which is that there are two warring factions of robots, each of which were programmed long ago and destroyed their creators, and now their entire purpose in life is to destroy their enemy, which is, in this case, each other.
Each other. And they look exactly the same, except they wear different color uniforms and their ships are different colors, which I'm sure is a commentary on we're all alike and we all fight each other for no particular reason. And this is the thing where we find out the interesting, I mean, it's pretty, as you said, it's a kind of a standard science fiction story. But we find out that the two warring races who created these robots, because B'Elanna's like, well, why didn't they just settle their differences? And the robot was like, oh, they did. But then once they came to a ceasefire, they became our enemies, so we killed them all.
It's kind of a rare example of like reverse, like the opposite of how in real life humans aren't going to have jobs because they're all going to be taken by robots. Whereas in this, it's like the robots are like, you're taking our jobs. What are we going to do now? So we're going to have to kill you. There's no good answer there.
We can't be repurposed. Even though, what's his name, 3947 was found like running a mining ship. So one imagines they could have repurposed these robots, but these robots, I guess, didn't.
If this was a two-parter, you know, I think Janeway or someone should have been like, look, we're going to teach you all how to become sculptors or something, you know, and they're all just going to find a different thing in life. But instead, they basically just like abandon the robots to continue their endless war in space. Yep.
And just robots.
Yet another dropped off along the way of the journey of Voyager. And B'Elanna is, of course, saved.
B'Elanna saved. And before, you know, it's in a... I do wonder. So I have one question about this, because it always seems like at the very dramatic point, like B'Elanna has the prototype. She decides, okay, now that I know you guys are crazy, homicidal, maniac robots, I'm going to destroy the prototype. So she stabs it in the heart. Our friend 3947 shoots her with his robot lightning bolts, and she gets thrown across the room. And then there's this dramatic moment where you think, oh no, he's going to kill Torres, although you know he's not. And she says something about, you know, find your true self or something. I don't know. I wonder, because then she immediately gets beamed away. I wonder if people feel like a second before you're beamed away, if you feel like you're about to be beamed away, so you could say something very wittily because you know you're not going to get killed.
Yeah. I like that idea.
Because otherwise, I'd just be begging for my life. I'd be like, please, robot, don't kill me. But she's calm, cool, and collected, and she says something witty, and then they beam her away. And then that's the end of the episode, right? She's fine. They off screen, they take her to the sick bay, and the robots continue their never ending battle to destroy each other.
Yeah, all in a day's work for Voyager.
And for two warring robot civilizations. Although I guess they aren't civilizations. Are they civilizations? I don't know. That's way better. And there you go. It was, it ends with a little scene between Torres and Janeway, where Janeway, they're commiserating, and Janeway says, it must have been difficult, and Torres says, it was necessary, and that's the end of the episode. What did you, we already talked about what you thought about, so that was it. That's the ending. I feel like this episode perhaps could have benefited from a B-plot, but there was no B-plot, so...
Yeah, like just when I quite like it when there's just like a really intense A plot and then the B plot is just astoundingly stupid.
Yeah, like Tuvok has lost his shoes.
Yeah. It's probably quite unlikely that you watch the TV show Riverdale, but that has the most astounding examples of that I've ever seen. It's based on the Archie comics. And every character apart from Archie has some really intense personal drama where it's like, my parents are criminals, or like, I've joined a gang, or I've got really intense, like, abusive relationship with my teacher. And Archie's problems are always like, what song am I going to sing at the school talent contest? And it's like, that level of A and B plot is kind of what you want for a lot of Star Trek. If it's going to be just like a middling episode, the A plot is like, we're going to save an entire life cycle of robots. And then the B plot is, you know, Neelix talking about his stew recipe.
Right. He has to find that right seventh spice or whatever. So, I mean, this episode had its highlights. I mean, I like B'Elanna Torres. So Hooray for her. I enjoy the fact that the robots use everybody's full rank and name all the time, so that's fun. I have a lot of questions about robot society, though, because they clearly seem sentient, but they don't seem
They have. I think they're just dumb, right? Because they had the wherewithal to realize that they were not going to be able to continue fighting and doing their job if the humans were around. So collectively, they both destroyed their masters, but they were like, our only purpose is fighting. So we're just going to continue fighting each other. So they're basically stupid because they can't move beyond that lifestyle of just killing each other.
Yeah,
and they also seem to give up stuff really easily because every time B'Elanna finds a new solution to one of the engineering problems, the robot's like, oh, we didn't think of that. And whenever she falls into a problem, they're like, well, we might as well just give up then. And it's like, did you realize that you have to try other options? Which kind of seems the key problem that was holding them back from reproducing is like they just gave up at the first hurdle.
Right. B'Elanna says something about how they could easily make spare arms, but they can't make this part because it's unique amongst them. And they've just been making copies of the same one that will not work. And they just keep doing it over and over again because they are dumb. You would think that. And that makes another level of they can't replace themselves. And yet they are continuing to fight. You would think that they would say at some point, maybe we should just leave each other alone and just live our robot lives happily.
It doesn't say much about the original like non-robot society, unless they were massively outnumbered, because it's like, couldn't you just defeat the robots? They're not that strategically minded, you know?
They're slow. They can shoot lightning out of their hands, so that's kind of cool. And they have these giant ships, although I assume the builders built the giant ships, so I don't know. They must have them too. I have more questions about the robot society than this episode is interested in answering, I think, but that's it. So that is a prototype. It's done. We get the prototype, has like 2 seconds of screen time, and then he gets killed by B'Elanna Torres. So overall, I think that was a mediocre episode of Voyager.
Yes, an excellent honor to see this one.
That's right. Well, you know, that the universe picked this one, so I take no responsibility. But this, I think, is an above-average episode of Random Trek because of you, Gavia. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.